It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. 2022, our first podcast of the new year. Mike Finnerty, welcome along.
Evening, Rob. Happy New Year.
Billy Joe Padden, 10 years we've been waiting for an FBD title. The wait continues. Welcome along.
Thanks, Rob. Is it that long, you know? Do they still get a trip to America out of it? That might, you know, G them up. No, that gone. That was my only motivation, Rob. I can guarantee you this time of year, that was my only motivation.
My God, the podcast could have been back in New York, Mike. We could have gone back with them. Oh.
No, bad news, lads. That was pulled a few years ago. Not sure if it was anything to do with the crash or the downturn or somebody just put a red line through it for the crack. But no, if you win the FBD now, you get a trophy. And you probably get soup and sandwiches and you move on. You move on.
A free training session in the dome.
Yeah, some of the most impressive FBD-related performances I saw were in New York. You know, not necessarily on a football field, but...
Hey, there's no truth to the rumour that I'm starting the Sligo football podcast just so I can go there this year. No truth whatsoever. As in, I've tried and I failed. Right. Anyways, we have other things to talk about, Mike. Sligo aren't in the final either, but Mayo almost certainly aren't after... Well, you know, I'm not sure everyone got their money's worth from Mayo, but it actually was quite a free-flowing, interesting contest. I'm going to say that much. Can't say much more for Mayo's performance, though.
Yeah, it's a funny one, Rob. As somebody who was reared, like Billy Joe, on a very different sort of FBD league than we saw last Friday night, it took a while to sort of get to grips with the fact that we were watching the FBD league in the world's largest indoor dome. In the middle of East Mayo, the hailstones, not that we knew at the time, but we knew when we came out, the hailstones were literally piling up at the bottom of the dome. There was like 3 or 4 inches of hailstones had gathered by the time we left later on that night. Inside, we were, you know, nice and warm and cozy, basically watching two intercounty teams play on a basketball court. And the one thing that struck me, look, loads of things struck me about it, but the one thing that is a little bit strange about it, it was a bit like going to see a play or to the theatre from the point of view of 300 people there. Everybody sat, applauded politely, and then left when it was over. You didn't get the same atmosphere. You didn't get anyone throwing abuse maybe up the sideline at someone from the other county or whatever. There wasn't that sort of cut and thrust, shall we say, or raw atmosphere. But it was all good, clean fun. Pádraic Joyce got his first win over Mayo as Galway manager. James Horan tells us he was working on lots of small things on, you know, tactically, game plan. I'm not sure if all of us saw these small things. Maybe we just haven't fully tuned to that frequency yet. One point in the last 20 minutes would suggest that Galway have more training done than Mayo anyway. They certainly finished stronger. But did we learn much? Not a whole pile. And now, of course, without being in the final, Mayo have a clear run to the first round of the National League.
Billy Joe, these preseason tournaments, I don't know what we get from them. It's tough on young lads. I mean, all eyes on them. They have one game. God, I don't know. I don't know how you can really find your best form.
Well, Mike seems to think that, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, that, you know, lots of the supporters that there weren't comfortable in their new plush surroundings. So I don't know, maybe they would have felt more comfortable with driving rain and hailstones. I definitely think that as a player, you know, that was part and parcel of the FBD League. And I don't have anything memorable about any of those games that I played in FBD leagues and can remember very few of them. And the one I do remember, I think we played Roscommon once in Ballyhonus, about 3 inches of water on the field. And I wore one of those Under Armour tops, brought the wrong one, brought the one that's meant to keep you cool as opposed to the one that's meant to keep you warm. And I remember before in the game, you know, will I, won't I, will this do any good or anything? So I put it on anyway under the jersey, and I think I nearly gave myself pneumonia. I was that tired. The first time I fell in the water, I thought, oh my God, I was just delighted to get through the 60 minutes and get in and get a shower. I don't even know what the result was like. I don't even know if I played well. And that's kind of my priority at the FBD League. And I think, if I can finish on a serious point, is that when you maybe are in the panel a couple of years, it's just about conditioning. It's just about getting yourself to where you need to be for the National League. But I think the point that you made, Rob, is that I think it'll be easier for players playing in the dome, young players coming onto the squad, to show what they can do, as opposed to have to deal with wet pitches, dealing with the conditions as well in some of the, in I suppose, let's put it this way, the more normal FBD environment.
Just for the record, Billy Joe, it wasn't actually that the crowd weren't comfortable. I'd actually say the complete opposite. They were too comfortable. And that goes for us lads in the media as well. You know, you go in, you sit in the, you're lovely, as you say, the soft seats and the plush surroundings. And it's almost like watching the widescreen TV at home. You know, you're not participating in the event, I think, is what happened to us all. But another thing that was missing as well, I think I might be in one of those moods. It's January, you know, it's dark early. I'm going to go nitpicking. You didn't see too many of those good old-fashioned coming togethers or sparks flying. The dome doesn't really lend itself to that sort of a game. Now, it's an incredible facility. Everybody goes home bone dry and you know, can literally walk to their car in 30 seconds and away you go. But maybe I'm yearning for the days when we stood in Ballinlough on a wet Sunday and, as you said, got pneumonia.
Are you sure that Kevin Walsh days were more so FPD games had more edge to them? I don't think that's Pádraig Joyce's way with the Mayo Galway rivalry, but I think Kevin Joyce teams did get stuck in early in January.
Yeah, as Pádraig Joyce said in the post-match press conference, one of the Galway journalists said to him, you must be delighted to get that first win over Mayo, even though it is only first week of January. And Pádraig didn't bat an eyelid and he said, "It's always nice to beat Mayo." And there was just such a glint in his eye, you know.
Come on, Pádraig. Yeah. Mike.
Good answer.
Shots fired.
Hey, yeah. Listen, Mike, I'll just say that you've mentioned you've five debutants who caught our eye in the Mayo newspaper. I recommend you buy the paper or get the digital version online and read all about Donegan McHugh, Sam Callanan, Frank Irwin, Rory Kane and Paddy Heenan's performances. Mike kind of picked them out. And I think fans will be kind of keen to hone in on that and see how they're shaping up. You learn a little bit about their backgrounds as well and which ones might be popping up in the under-20s this year too. But Mike, I think, you know, if I'm being honest, the first thing I went to in the paper were the James Horan press conference, because I think that's the time of year it is. What kind of news has he for us? We don't hear from him too much early on in the year. So that was our first chance for an open chat with him and some interesting news.
Yeah, there was indeed. I suppose, depending on your perspective, there were a couple of headlines to come out of it. On a positive note, and unequivocally positive note, Killian O'Connor and Jason Doherty both edging closer to their returns for Mayo, according to James. In fact, Jason Doherty was due to play on Friday evening, James said, but couldn't be in Bacon. How did James put it? He said, we know what's going on in the world at the moment, so he couldn't be here. So I think there's no need to join too many dots to figure out that Jason was at home with the feet up and should be hopefully good to go sooner rather than later. Killian's one is as you'd expect, it's a bit more long-term. Now, James expects Jason Doherty to be available for the Donegal game in a few weeks, which is great news. And I just went back and had a look just to be sure. You know the way sometimes your mind plays tricks. If Jason plays against Donegal, it will be his first time to play for Mayo for 29 months. Now, you bear in mind he has torn cruciate ligaments in both his knees in that period of time. So to come back and play at intercounty level again is some achievement. So let's hope, fingers crossed, that all works out. And from Killian O'Connor's perspective, yeah, he's on his way back from the torn Achilles tendon. He's back training. I thought this was a good quote from James. If you ask Killian, he'll be ready very soon. But if you ask the medics, it might be a bit longer. And James was smiling as he said that. Because anybody who knows Killian will tell you he's a determined sort of chap. And I'd say if he could, he'd be presenting himself ready for duty for the Donegal match as well in a few weeks' time. But that's not the case. James reckons it'll take him a bit longer. So we should see him hopefully at some stage during the spring. And then I assume as well, Rob, you're alluding to the Oisín Mullen story as well.
Yeah, can we pause on that? Yeah, can we pause on the Oisín Mullen story for a second? Because I think that needs to give us, we need to give that time. So take your breath in your cars or wherever you're driving. Don't worry, we're going to chat about that because that's a whole new ball game. Billy Joe, Jason Doherty's back. I want to talk about Killian O'Connor as well, but 32 years of age, double cruciate, incredible recovery period. I think it's yet another example of the resolve that are in this group of Mayo players.
It's an inspiring comeback, no different to maybe what Tom Parsons was able to do when recovering from his horrific injury and getting back out on the field. I think that in many ways, when he does get back out on the field for Mayo, it'll be an achievement in itself, you know, to get through all that mentally and physically and put yourself in a position to get back out on the field. And I think the important thing then for us as supporters is that we support him, because there's no way in the world that after 29 months away at the age he's at, that Jason Doherty can go back to being Jason Doherty, the footballer he was right away, in that all action, all over the field, winning breaks, physically putting his body on the line, brilliant tackler. It's going to take him a while to get back to that level, and he might not get back to that level. But I think he's a good enough footballer that if he can get to the best level that he can be at this summer, he's going to be an absolute, important player for Mayo. But I think in many ways as well, I think he'd be an awful important player in the group. When you consider the young players that you have there, you know, I played a little bit with Jason. He was a much quieter fella, and probably younger at that stage. I'm sure he's a more prominent role in the culture of the group now. And particularly when you are a player that has come back from that adversity, younger players around you will look to you and say, well, look what he has been able to do to get back here. And that's, as I said, inspiring for the rest of those young players as well.
Mike, it came up in the Discord chat we had with some of the Mayo fans that came in to just trial one and ourselves. Just the role that Jason Doherty plays, how much he was missed last year, just popped up before news had broken about his comeback. So hopes are high that maybe there's another spark in him.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because that thought struck me as well watching the game last Friday night. And look, none of us are going to read a whole pile into an FBD League game in a dome in January. It's going to be a very different story when they hit the pitch and hit Division One. But yeah, Jason has the potential to play that centre forward / wing forward, link man role, playmaker role that Mayo are crying out for right now. Kevin McLaughlin is probably the closest. And Ryan O'Donoghue, but we need Ryan closer to goal on the evidence of the second half, the last night even. Regard when Ryan went in the full forward line, it changed everything. But it's interesting, I suppose, when you drill down, like Jason turned 32 back in November, right? So he's not getting any younger, as Billy Joe said, and he's coming back as well from, he actually did those two cruciate ligaments in the space of 14 months. So it is, you'd imagine, going to take him a bit of time to get up to speed again. But it is, I suppose, worth mentioning, since the pandemic struck and everyone's lives changed quite a bit, Jason has actually moved back down to Mayo now, I gather, for work. And I think now there's very few players left in Dublin, actually. Very few Mayo players left in Dublin at this stage. And there'll be even less once the colleges shut for the summer, I'd imagine. So, you know, Jason's living in Mayo now, shoot down the road to training, and you know, it'll be huge, huge if he can get fit again.
Yeah, I think as well that just in terms of the way, you know, what we expect of him, I think that he's such a versatile footballer that, you know, we have to give him time to see what his role will be in the squad, but I think he can. I even think that he can be an impact, whether you're bringing him into that half forward line where you need him, but like he has the ability to bring him into the full forward line. He's played football in there as well. Look, as Mike rightly pointed out, the more bodies in the absence of Killian O'Connor, the more effect and Conroy, the more, you know, we may need players to spend minutes in the full forward line, and that's something that he can do, particularly in the closing stages of games, I imagine. So that versatility will be beneficial as well. But look, we just have to give him time. He has to get his legs under him. He has to play minutes. So I'll be absolutely delighted if he plays something against Donegal, because the more minutes he plays now, the better chance he has of being at a high level in the summer.
If Killian O'Connor, Billy Joe, get some minutes in the league, we'll all be delighted as well, because, you know, we've all been speculating on how long it might take, and with the earlier than usual start to the championship, there was that fear that we might miss him for a good bit of this season. Now there's hope that we might see him in the league.
Yes, but I agree, but I think the mental damage that or the mental uncertainty that being out for 29 months would give any player, you know, you've been so far removed from it, it would be greater in Jason's case. Whereas Killian, you know, okay, but he went out at that midway point of last season and he'd be back for the start. So, like, that's a more manageable thing to deal with mentally, I think.
But will he, Billy Joe? Like, I was thinking about that. Will Killian O'Connor feature in February or March realistically, or are we being very optimistic here? Like, he ruptured his Achilles tendon on the 13th of June. Would it not be way ahead of schedule for Killian to play in the league, bearing in mind the league is February and March, basically?
Well, look, I'm no medical expert. Those sort of things usually 6 to 8 months. Maybe I'm being optimistic. Like, crucially, is what, 6 months now to Achilles? Goes closer to the 8 months. We know that he'll be in good physical condition. We know that he'll be mad to get out on the field. We know that he can manage playing with pain if he gets the medical advice to go out there and get the go-ahead that he's not at risk of doing more damage. So I wouldn't be one bit surprised if we saw him used off the bench in that sort of controlled environment where he has a controlled number of minutes to play in a game, that we might see him towards the end of the league. Well, that's what I'm hoping for anyway. But again, I'm saying this as... I'm no medical expert in relation to this. I don't know how his rehab is going. That's just the way I feel. I feel that for a player that has as experienced as he is, that's probably all the time trying to push it on. I'm not saying he's towards the end of his career, but you know, if he's played more football than he's going to play over the next number of years, I'd imagine he'll be really itching to get back out there.
Interesting. Maybe we'll talk about more in the coming weeks about what that means for all the young players in there and those early league games and, you know, that chance to establish yourself, but the importance of doing so with players coming back. More on that anon. But look, I know our listeners are like, hey, there's only one story that jumped out at us, Rob. Can't believe you didn't lead with us. Mike Finnerty. I mean, like in December 1st, all over the internet, all the leading websites were saying, last hopes of Mayo fans dashed as Oisin Mullen gets a number on his jersey. But as of today, still some hope that maybe, just maybe. Can you make some sense of this for us?
Not really, Rob. No, not really.
Okay, moving on.
I'll be off by then. No, look, what's that phrase? It's hard to know if you're coming or going. I mean, it literally is hard to know if Oisin is coming or going. And like, I'm very conscious as well that we're talking here about a young man's life, career. You know, he's obviously got a huge decision to make, and it would seem, and none of us are really a whole pile the wiser than anybody else, because this is something that has been really kept under wraps the last couple of months, to be honest. But what I tried to do, I suppose, in the paper today, it was just briefly set out the timeline, as you mentioned, about the key dates, and all of that came off the back of, just for the benefit of our listeners, after the game last Friday evening in the Dome, James Horan spoke to members mainly of the local media, I think. I don't think there was anybody there from the Nationals as such. But yeah, and during the course of that conversation, as you might expect, he was asked about Oisin Mullen. It just happens that he was asked about Oisin Mullen by me on behalf of the Mayo News. And look, it's probably fair to say James was quite guarded in his answer. The response didn't go on too long. I just inquired what the situation was at the moment, whether he had gone to Australia or was going, because we all know now that Geelong are back in pre-season this week. So I know a certain amount of the Irish players have been going over to Australia over the last few weeks to join up with their squads. And that was obviously the expectation with Oisin as well, given that Geelong had announced on, what, the 10th of November, 2 months ago now exactly, that he had they had signed him. So I just was curious, I suppose, had he gone, was he going? Because we've all heard the speculation over the last few weeks that maybe it's not quite as cut and dry as it initially had seemed. And James just responded. He said it's just a difficult situation, and Oisin and his family deserve the time and space to work through it. So I suppose we've all spent a bit of time over the last few days just trying to figure out exactly what that means. I'm not sure I can say I know what it does mean. I don't, being completely honest, but it would seem that Oisin is trying to come to a decision, and it's proven quite difficult for him. And look, why wouldn't it? He comes from a lovely family, a very tight-knit family. They live obviously just outside Kilmaine. He loves playing for Kilmaine. He loves playing for Mayo. And, you know, he's got the opportunity here to go literally to the other side of the world and play professional sport. Maybe by the time this podcast goes out, he'll be in Geelong training with his teammates. Or maybe he won't be. We just don't know. But probably fair to say we weren't any the wiser after we spoke to James on Friday night, you know.
Young player of the year by two, Billy Joe Paddon. There's a reason why the whole county's hanging on this.
Yes, and I think if we all speak from a selfish point of view, we'd all say, well, we hope he makes the decision to stick around and we can watch him playing for Mayo and Kilmaine for the next 10 years. But I think that there's more to it than at this stage. I think that most Mayo supporters that have kind of, you know, tuned into this on and off over the last two months, well, I say this from a position of pure speculation and that I don't know Oisin personally. I don't know anyone close to him or haven't spoke to anyone close to him in relation to what his thinking is or any of that. This is just me speculating. And it just appears to me that this is a decision that is obviously very, very difficult for him to make. And I imagine he's in some sort of turmoil considering it. Sometimes it's hard, even when you get these brilliant opportunities in life to actually, you know, bite the bullet and go for them. And I think that if I was in his shoes, I think I'd want some closure at it at some stage. I think that his family might feel the same way that they'd obviously however they feel about this opportunity for him. But I imagine it's been a very, very difficult for him. And My main feeling at the minute now would be putting what I want for Mayo football to one side. I want him to make a decision that's the right decision for him, both mentally and something that he has can make a decision and put his full heart into it. Because I don't want him going back playing for Mayo if he's thinking that he's regretting something or if he's not full-blooded towards it. If he really feels that he wants to go and challenge himself in the professional sporting environment in Australia, and if that's his gut feeling, well then I think that's what he should go and do. Because at the end of the day, you know, you only have responsibility to yourself in many ways to go and live your life the way you want to live. And while this has been going on, I've been just more and more concerned about him and him having to make this decision and how difficult it must be. Because I know if I was in that situation, not that anyone had ever offered me a contract to go to Australia once they saw my bleep test scores, but I just want him to be happy, to be confident in the decision he's made and to be well in terms of the decision he's made and happy about that. Because as it's going on, it's more of a concern to me. Because the last thing I want, and I suppose the last thing I want is Oisin Mullen feeling a responsibility that he to stay around and then his heart isn't in being around, and that no one wants to live their life like that.
Brilliantly put. I want to change the tact on this and stick with the subject, but I want to ask you, Mike, just on that, Billy Joe just raises something that's so, so important. If it's the same sport, if it's Liverpool and Chelsea changing a player, clubs can feel like, oh, well, we've given you the same money. Come on. But you really are apples and oranges when you're talking about amateur sport. Yes, the GA county boards around the country have found ways to look after players by making sure that they get good jobs, good opportunities in life, can balance college. You know, you can do that in the amateur era. But you really are comparing apples with oranges when it comes to professional opportunity.
Of course, yeah. And if you think of the guys who have gone over during our lifetime, and you know, Pierce Hanley is the obvious Mayo example. You know, these are guys who are living their lives pretty similar to the rest of us. You know, they've gone to school, they've gone to college, they've gone working, they're trying to save for a house or whatever the case may be. They've done their driving test. You know, life is following a fairly straight line, and they just happen to be exceptional intercounty footballers as well. And then all of a sudden, they get spotted by an agent or approached by a club, and they're thrust into a completely different world. They're having completely different conversations. And as you said, the subject of cold, hard cash is now on the table, because a professional sport wants to take them to the other side of the world and give them a shot. And then it starts boiling down to different people's personalities, different people's personal situations. You know, I'm just thinking, I interviewed Colin Boyle the other day, and I know we'll be talking a bit more about this maybe later, but, you know, when we talked about, did you enjoy playing in big games for Mayo? You know, Colin was just making the point, like, he was sick with nerves for days leading up to games and in the dressing room before games. And then when he hit the field, it all disappeared. Somebody else, Lee Keegan, for example, he's waiting all week to stroll out onto Croke Park and doesn't, you know, give it too doesn't give it a thought and goes and, you know, wins another All-Star or whatever. But it all depends on the type of person you are. And obviously in this instance, Oisin's got a lot to consider. Not that maybe Pierce or Keane Hanley didn't, or all the others who went across, but you know, it's a big move in the middle of a global pandemic as well.
Also, Mike, can I jump in? It's not, and Billy Joe on this, it's not Chelsea and Liverpool either. I've worked in professional rugby myself, and I obviously cover it. Very similar to AFL when you talk about wages and then those introductory offers, you know. So I think sometimes people think of professional sport as one block and one entity, but there's a huge difference between a contract you might get for even, I'm going to say, Sheffield Wednesday or Colchester United, and an AFL contract, for example. You know what I'm saying? It's still a small enough sport, AFL.
I'm not sure that, and I say this without having spoke to any of the Irish lads that have taken this opportunity when they've been offered contracts. I'm not sure it's all about the money in that you're thinking about, okay, well, what are they offering me for this first contract I'm going to get? I think it's the competitive nature of the individual being offered this opportunity to go to a different lifestyle because you're living a professional athlete's lifestyle, to go and test yourself against, you know, some of the very best, you know, field athletes in the world, no doubt in my mind, in terms of an endurance field athletes and the way the Aussie Rules players can run around the field. And then I suppose, and then to live on your merits and see, can you get to master that game and hit those targets of being a first team player, then being a first team regular, then being on a winning team, and then the contracts, the money will take care of itself after that. I think the players that generally go have that sort of mindset that they want to test themselves and live the professional athlete's lifestyle more so than just what can I make straight away.
Billy Joe, just as a matter of interest, if go back to when you were 22. Yeah, I know you're going to have to, you know, really cast your mind back here. It's not today or yesterday.
Forget about the peak
test.
If
you were... Yeah, exactly. Let's pretend you had a different aerobic capacity.
Yeah.
if you had an Australian rules club interested in you and say, Billy Joe, we want you to come to Australia. Come and play with us. You know, we'll give you a shot. When you think back, would a 22-year-old Billy Joe Patton have gone for it? Or can you see the huge decision it would have been for you at that stage in your life?
It's hard. I don't know. At 22, you know, maybe. I suppose I'm trying to... look, I suppose education was important to me at that stage, not just because I wanted to go and play Sigurdsson and have the crack with the lads after the games, but it was... But I suppose at 22, I might have had... you know, done a couple of years in university, so you had some sort of grounding and some sort of maybe qualification behind you that you could carry on to later life. And that was something that was always something for me. But I think that I probably would have taken the opportunity. I think I would have looked at it at that time. That's something that I can only learn from. That's something that I can only improve from as a person, but as an athlete as well. And I think I would have looked at it at that stage, putting myself back in that position. Now I probably would have been like that. It's a totally different thing for Oisin, because I suppose he's already nationally recognised as one of the best footballers in the country. He's already played in two All-Ireland finals before he's 22. Now, how does that change his decision-making process? Maybe he feels that there's not that much more. The only thing he can achieve in the game is winning an All-Ireland. He's already performed really, really well at a high level. Maybe it's all about him testing himself, in the Aussie rules environment, and can he get to that level there? But if you were asking me at 22, not that I would ever have been offered, but I think I probably would have taken the opportunity.
I would have taken it too, but I don't think that's the question here. On a more serious note, Frank Irwin, Mike, I'm correct in saying this. You mentioned that he was in an AFL combine and the scouts were looking at him, weren't they?
Yeah, while he was still in secondary school, actually.
Wow.
You know, which... That just puts it in perspective.
I just want to ask you, Billy Joe, just look, at the end of the day, all our listeners are Mayo fans. We're all Mayo fans. You know, we care about our county football team. If once in a while, a couple of Handley brothers and maybe Oisin Mullen goes, maybe it's an overreaction to say this, but does there need to be a bit more regulation on these AFL scouts and what they're doing? Do they need to, like, you know, the way in American sports, you have to declare yourself as a scout when you go in. I mean, does that matter? But even just the semantics of it, can we do more to just, you know, at least make sure that there's a pathway and there's an understanding of the way these players are approached, all that kind of stuff?
I don't know, because as a you know, being a member of whatever Belmullet GAA club, or you don't own your players. They don't have a contract with you to play. You know, none of those Mayo lads playing for Mayo have a contract to play for with Mayo. So, like, how, what avenue do you know? Can you force them to do? It's just somebody like what would be the difference if some 7'2" fella from Glenamoy started playing brilliantly for Mayo and the New York Knicks decided to give him a go in basketball? They're different sports. I don't mean to be flippant about it, but
Gavin Duffy went to play rugby all those years ago. So it does happen.
So did you, us, from our point of view as GAA people, we don't have control over our players, and it's right that we don't have control, because we're an amateur sport and people obviously should not feel that they have to commit so solidly to any one team for a long period of time other than what suits themselves and what their teammates demand of each other as such, if I can frame it that way. But what I will say is that I think, I don't know, was it Mickey Hart or somebody else that has said over the years that, like, well, why are we, you know, promoting international rules? Why are we, you know, actively encouraging it, given, you know, creating those links between the two sports? If we're really worried about them taking more of our talent, well, I think you should politely decline any future international rules and say, look, you know what, we're happy with the game we have. We're proud to develop it. We'll maybe focus on bringing our best players instead of us to Australia, but to all over the world where there are Irish people working and living, and maybe rewarding our great players that way, as opposed to having them line out for Ireland against Australia.
Yeah, I'm thinking scholarships, internships. There's a lot you can still offer within an amateur context. But Mike, myself and yourself smiled a little bit when Billy Joe said we don't own their players, because you and I know how hard it is to get an inter-county manager to let a player out for an hourly interview once in a while. So hashtag, let's not go there. Speaking of going there, James Horan was chatting. We know it's a tough season ahead. Let's move this on a little bit, because I don't think we have much more concrete on Oisín Mullen for now anyways. You first, Billy Joe Patton, you were saying last week in a brilliant column in the Mayo News, you can still get it online on the digital edition. You know, there's a bit of pressure on him now. It was interesting that you mentioned the All-Ireland Finals loss to Tyrone and Donegal. I mean, he's lost them to Dublin as well, but that's nearly, you know, a lot of people can stop and say, listen, greatest team of all time, yada, yada. But we all know at bookending either end of this generation of talent are two All-Ireland Finals that we're going to live long in the memory for all the wrong reasons if Mayo don't do this.
Yes, and a scary thought occurred to me there this evening before we started recording, in that, you know, maybe Dublin aren't coming back to the pack. Maybe they're just going to be a contender as opposed to being the greatest team of all time and just this vision in the windscreen that you can never catch up to. Those great Mayo players, those great Mayo teams, you know, maybe never reached the level they were in 14, 15, 16, those times. And we've unluckily missed an opportunity. But getting back to the question, I think it is a bit more difficult. I think it is a bit more difficult because it's hard to keep going. It's hard to keep going back mentally and getting back up there and putting yourself in those positions. But the only thing that should give them encouragement, and I think this should give James Horan encouragement, is that the All-Ireland was won last year by Tyrone without reaching the level of any of the previous six All-Ireland finals in terms of the quality of the football. And I don't mean that it did being disrespectful to Tyrone. They won the All-Ireland fair and square. They were the best team. They did everything that was asked of them. But was the Tyrone performance in the semi-final win or All-Ireland final win good as anything Dublin produced in the 6 years previous to that? No, it wasn't. So I suppose maybe there's some encouragement we got there, that maybe the team that wins the All-Ireland this year will not have to reach those crazy levels that Dublin reached during their six in a row as well. Now, can Mayo get themselves to a level that's the best in the country for the given year, 2022? It's going to be a big challenge. It's going to require Killian O'Connor coming back to form. It's going to require some unusual things where we may have to have a bit more luck with injuries. We're going to need all of, and I think it was interesting that when we got the chance to speak to Andy Morn and read in his book, that some of the things that he felt that James Horan does maybe better than anyone else is motivate those young players, give them the belief And he's going to need to call in all his abilities of as motivation and instilling confidence in those players to show them that they can go again. Should they lose Oisin? Should Killian O'Connor not be ready for another couple of months? And then you're reliant on bringing up some of those young players that maybe got debuts last week. And again, can Tommy Conroy take another step? Can Matty Ruan take another step? Can Ryan O'Donoghue, you know, even improve on what he's done? You know, there's more in Enda Hessian. Those are the sort of players, again, that are going to have to make the step up while at the same time, you know, superhuman stuff from the likes of Killian and Lee. And if the league starts well like that, well, then that will give them confidence. But I think maybe more so than in any other year under James Horn, I think the league and getting wins early will be important and will make his job an awful lot easier in terms of can we compete at the top table again this summer. So the league is a priority more so than it ever has been in James Horn's campaigns previously.
John Gunnigan was telling me that blog hits were as big as ever, Mike. John Prenti was telling Michael Galler in the Mayo News that 5,000 people paid a tenner to watch an FPD game at 6 o'clock on a Friday. I know and I agree. You know, I always say I hear it in the shop, you hear it on the ground. The mood is somber in Mayo. The interest remains as big as ever, I would suggest.
Yeah, I'm not fully convinced yet. I think there is a hangover from the All-Ireland. I think there's no doubt about that. I think we all feel it a little bit. I think Billy Joe touched on something there that I'm fascinated to see how it plays out. And that's how the All-Ireland final defeat impacts on the playing group into the spring and on into the summer. Because a few things struck me reading Billy Joe's brilliant column last week. I genuinely, if you haven't read it yet, I would recommend you go back and find it online. And then just coming away from the Dome on Friday night and thinking about it on the drive back, I make it about 14 weeks until Mayo play Galway in the Championship. And we still don't know where that game will be played. It's scheduled for McHale Park, but there's no guarantee McHale Park will be ready by the 24th of April. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, I remember Austin O'Malley on RT Radio the day after the All-Ireland. And Austin is as sharp as you'll get in terms of an analyst. And I remember him surgically pointing out the positions in the Mayo team that he felt needed to be addressed if we were going to be able to come back and win an All-Ireland. And time now is so tight for James Horn and the management team to address those issues. For example, Billy Joe wrote about it in the column, the full-back line. Full-back line right now, three empty slots, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there are three places there to be filled. Number six, particularly if Oisin goes to Australia, a partner for Matty Ruan in the middle of the field, a centre forward, and then you're relying on Killian to get back to the level he was at, and then all of a sudden you've got a serious full forward line then of Ryan O'Donoghue, Killian O'Connor, Tommy Conroy. But if we go back to the full back line, and Billy Joe, I got a lot of grief on our last podcast. You weren't on, but I got a lot of grief for not spending more time or even any time on the Lee Keegan question. And look, we will come back to it again, but I have to ask you to save myself a bit of grief. Lee Keegan was so good last season. He was good enough to win a fifth All-Star playing in the full back line. Can Mayo afford to play him in the full back line again if they're going to go and do what needs to be done? Or how is James Horn going to accommodate Lee out in the half-back line and have a full-back line that can deal with your Galways and everybody else? I mean, that's just one of a load of conundrums he has to solve, you know, between now and the 24th of April. But the Keegan one is huge, isn't it? I know you feel strongly about that one.
Yeah, well, I think that even if you look at the periods in the game where Lee Keegan was most dominant last season were at times where he was attacking up the field, were times where his starting position maybe was in the half back line. I think that considering his best position, the half back line, considering the stage he's at in his career, he's towards the end of it, considering that, you know, he maybe isn't as sharp or he doesn't have the quickness left to right, the agility that you need in the full back line, whereas he still has the pace and power to drive forward and get scores and the know-how to time his run properly. I think that we just have to, and I think as well that it'll energize him playing out there. Like, if you remember the Dublin game, like, you know, the first half was ropey for all the, from all the Mayo players. But, like, Lee Keegan really came into his own when Dublin, or when Mayo played most of that game in Dublin's half. And you'll remember that Lee Keegan was fouled for one of those long-range points from Robbie where he ran off Con O'Callaghan's shoulder. That's a starting position from the half-back line. You know, he got forward and got, I think, did he get a score that game as well? That his starting position was the half-back line. The inspirational point he got in the All-Ireland final against Tyrone, starting point is the half-back line. Even though he started off in the full back line, his best work last year was done in the half-back line, was done from that position. He essentially won an All-Star at half-back for me. You know, that's because that's where his best work was done. That's the way I would see it. So why you have to try and find a situation where he will play in the half-back line if you're going to get the best out of Lee Keegan, the greatest Mayo footballer I've ever seen in the twilight of his career. And that's what I want to see. I want to see as many minutes of him playing as we can. Now, it's about finding the fullback solution. And I have to say, last point, I think, you know, O'Hare has done enough to have a starting position for that first league game in what he's done last season. And then it's about filling in around him.
Quick one, Billy Joe, before we bring this podcast to its conclusion. I'm just wondering about how important the league is when the first championship game is it in late April? Let's get a nod from Mike on that if it is.
24th, yeah.
Like, does it change the whole concept of the league? Like, there's no big gap there.
I think it does. I think it does. I think it's an unknown. I think it will, the teams with the most self-confidence, the teams with the best sports science in terms of planning your run at it, will have to, you know, change the way they've done things, obviously. You're probably seeing where the teams with the most resources in terms of sports science and physical conditioning will probably be able to react to it better. But I do think that the league is important for Mayo from a mental point of view to get the wins, considering the way last year finished. But at the same time, you'll have to, like, I'm no conditioning expert, but you'll have to put in place a plan that allows you to be still raising your level towards that date in April, still close to where you need to be, but with a bit more that you, as the stages go on, that you're approaching your peak further along the championship run. So it's a different challenge. And to be honest, it's a good point. I think it'll be one of the most interesting things when we look at the championship as a whole.
Yeah, it's just when you said O'Hare should have that first game in league position, I think a lot of the jerseys that are being handed out against Donegal, I think then players will be just trying to hang on to them all the way through. So that's going to be, it's going to be interesting. Mike, one player who never kind of was interested in when he peaked, because I think he would have peaked on the 1st of January in the muck, was Colin Boyle. You got to talk to him. And my God, I've got to listen to some of the audio. We've got a special one for our listeners next week.
Yeah, I thought you were teeing up Billy Joe there.
Sorry.
Actually.
Obviously.
He loved a bit of muck as well.
I'll have to ask John Mahan about that one, but I think John has often said he was peaking at that point in time, right? Peaking, is that the word? Or was it another P word? Anyways, moving on.
No, look, last Friday morning, was it the first Friday in January? I think it was. To get to spend 2 hours chatting to Colin Boyle was an absolute privilege. And yeah, I think the listeners are going to absolutely love it. I listened to it in its entirety again today. The first half, we talk mainly about the last couple of seasons and how that was for him. And then the second half, you get all the rest. And anybody who thinks Colin Boyle is quiet or shy or retiring, you're absolutely right. But can he talk? My God, can he talk? There is a career, if he wants, in my mind, is absolutely a career for him in broadcasting, in the media, if he'd like. He's so engaging. He's so informed. He's so eloquent. And he's everything you'd like him to be. And I really, really enjoyed it. And it just goes to show, we really don't get to know the lads as such when they're playing now. It's they're in the bubble. It's almost like a full-time job, and I get that their focus has to be on being at their peak for games, and you know, then the close season is so short. If we don't grab them in those couple of weeks, they're gone again. But you know, to sit down with Colm, having retired, and to be able to hear him tell his story, and that's the beauty of these podcasts, isn't it? You get the time to sit and chat and let the story breathe. But if you're a fan of Mayo football and you're a fan of Colm Boyle, you're going to absolutely love this interview, because he cuts to the chase. He Every question he was asked, he answered it straight. There was no ducking, no diving. And we covered a whole lot of ground from meeting Roy Keane to his last involvement with Mayo and everything in between.
Billy Joe, I've got to ask you this. Like, what was it like playing with him?
I think it doesn't surprise me that Cullum articulated his views so well in, as Mike set out there. You know, he was always very engaging as a teammate, always had an opinion on stuff. But I suppose he was only starting out in his career. Maybe a year or two is all I would have played with him. And he wasn't the player that he ended up being at that stage. But you could tell that he was like a sponge, learning and constantly trying to improve at all those early stages. And it's to his credit in the improvements he made in his game and to the players he ended up being. But I suppose I remember him even at that time as, he's great crack. You know, he was up for the crack as much as any of the lads. Great teammate. Enjoyed training. Was you can see he was the heart of that Mayo squad, really. And in terms of he set the tone emotionally in the group. And when I look back on his early days, you could tell that because he could get riled up. He was very passionate about, everything associated with playing for Mayo and putting his heart and soul into it. And it doesn't surprise me that even if he does decide to go into broadcasting, that he'll be able to portray that in the big moments for when he's watching games for whoever asked him to do that.
Just thinking, Rob, Billy Joe would want to keep his form up. I suppose he'd, let's say Cullum Boyle comes with a run to break into the Mayo News Football podcast. I mean, I wouldn't like to be in Billy Joe's shoes. He could be the Damien Comer to Boyler's retirement.
I'm not doing the phone calls to say to either Billy Joe or Cullum Boyle, which one are you missing out? That's what I'm not doing. Anyways.
I think it's all done by text now, Rob. I think it's all done by text. No, just a quick one, because I may forget to mention this when the Boyler interview comes up in a couple of weeks. But just in case you thought Boyler couldn't get any more legendary, and this only came out by the by. He didn't tell me this straight out, but it just sort of slipped out at the end of the interview. He had been working a shift. He's a guard there in Westport. He'd been working a shift the previous evening that was due to finish at midnight. It didn't finish until 7 a.m. He had to step in and cover for a colleague, which, I was never great at maths, but Cullum would have got about 2.5 to 3 hours sleep before he came to meet me to do the interview. And he looked like he was ready to play in an All-Ireland final. So I don't know what he'd be like on 8 hours. But, and he was more lucid and eloquent than I think the three of us put together. So, lads, if Boyler's like that on 2.5, 3 hours, I can only imagine what he's like if he gets the full compliment.
Come here, we just have enough time to finish the pod on good news on Kilmina, but we'll put them to the end because disappointing news on Knockmore. Billy Joe Paddon, just two kind of clubs have won. Just two Mayo clubs have won Connacht titles since 2000 and I go back to 2008, and that's Castlebar Mitchell's twice is what I'm trying to say, just one Connacht club. It continues to be not a huge return for such a brilliant championship. Like, people have all around the country have watched the Mayo championship on RT and TG Car this year, and it's high quality, it's brilliant entertainment. It's just disappointing to see Knockmore miss out as well, because we thought with Curfin out and we thought with what a second year, a lot of people felt they could win this title, but fair play to Pierce's, I guess.
Yeah, Pierce is the better team throughout, dominated the game. I think if you look at the stat that you just reeled out there, is that, Curfin had a major part to play in that, and Curfin were an exceptional club side, no doubt about that, and the way that the levels they were able to reach year and year, and that really kind of, they controlled everything that was happening in the Connacht Club Championship. I suppose I'm thinking back maybe to a heyday for the Mayo Senior Championship when you had Knockmore and Crossline and Ballina, Charlestown all winning. I think they all won. In the, that period was the noughties, really, wasn't it? Late 90s and noughties. I would say that the standard of the Mayo Championship across the board was probably higher in that. You probably, each year you had 3 or 4 or 5 teams that could win it and you knew would do well. Whereas, there's no doubt Knockmore have been the best team in Mayo the last two seasons. And it's unfortunate for them that they weren't able to build on that superiority. But club championship for them. The club championship is a thing where, you know, I see that a lot up here in Ulster as well, where you have to keep knocking on the door sometimes and keep improving, keep getting better, keep bringing young players into it. If you look at Kilcoo now, many people's favourites to win the All-Ireland club coming out of Down, you know, they won the Down championship a couple of times and felt they should have done better in Ulster. And it's only now after, you know, what, 7 or 8 goes at it that that they're really reaching the high level. So maybe that's just what you need at that stage, and Knockmore need to keep ploughing on.
Just one brief note on the Knockmore game, Rob. I was down at the game the last day. Kevin McLaughlin did an interview last week. He did a series of interviews to promote the game. I thought there was one line that you know, just kind of slipped in and is worth maybe circling back to take another look at. He said he hadn't fully decided if he's going to commit to play with Mayo this year or not. And you know, imagine if he decides not to, I suppose, was my first thought. Let's hope he does. But it would be a 14th season. He's played a lot of football. He's had a long season with Knockmore. It's maybe just one to keep an eye on, you know?
Well, there you have it. A weekend when the biggest indoor arena in the world went to laptops all around the world for a return of €50,000 brought in for the coverage of that game. And I'm sure lots more brought in for the other games as well. Great job by everyone in the Connacht GA. Delighted that it's raised some extra cash online as well. It's a tremendous facility. So that's the good news story. Billy Joe, you have your hand up. Go for it.
Well, you know my love of baseball and everything retro. I think the Houston Astros used to have, their crest used to have the old Superdome or Astrodome. Mm. Was on their crest. So maybe we'll just change the Connacht Council crest to a big dome.
Interesting.
I don't know. You can, Mike, you can put that to Mr. Prenti.
Listen.
Yeah, leave that with me, Billy Joe. I think that's the best thing I can say there.
John Prenti definitely has a subscription to the Major League Baseball coverage during the offseason. I'm convinced of it. Mike, talk to me.
Yeah, mention of the dome. I got to give a shout out to Damien Munley. Used to play with Knockmore, played a bit with Mayo. He's now living down in New Zealand. And his tweet made the Mayo news this week because it just jumped out at me. You could tell Damien Munley played a bit of FBD on a bad winter's day in a Ballinlaw or a Ballyhaunas or a Ballinamore, somewhere beginning with B anyway, and the weather wasn't great because he tweeted on Sunday, or over the weekend, sorry, would have loved to play in a dome the first week of January as my opportunity to impress the Mayo management. Looks like a lot of lads let the opportunity pass them by. But hopefully Damien is a podcast listener. I have a feeling he might be. And keep them coming, Damien. Really good footballer and a tasty corner forward he was as well. He'd come in handy, actually, at the moment if he was around.
All hail the mighty Kilmina, Mike. Michael Gallagher was there. Great coverage of it in the paper. They're into the All-Ireland semi-final. They were wearing black and white in Markovic Park against the green and red. It was mind-boggling in and of itself. But they are some story and some group of young men and one or two future Mayo stars in there, we feel, as well.
Yeah, I know we're not doing the necessarily the podcast player of the week this show, but if we were, winner all right, Neely Ryan scores a goal in the Connacht Junior Club final of 2003. Fast forward 19 years later, Neely Ryan scores a goal in the Connacht Junior Club final at the ripe old age of 38. Like so many of the Kilmina lads, family steeped in the club. He is the quintessential club man. He's a great bit of stuff. And I gather, I hope he doesn't mind me telling this story. I'm sure he won't, because in fairness, the Kilmina lads, they wear their hearts on their sleeve. Michael Gallagher was telling me yesterday that one of the first things he said once the euphoria of winning the match had sunk in was, the wife is going to kill me. We have to train for another few weeks now for an All-Ireland semi-final. You know, we thought at this stage the season would be long over. But look, it's a great story. It's a great story. And I know it has given a huge lift to the whole parish down there at a really tough time for everybody. But they've really jumped on the bandwagon and they're surfing the wave, and long may it continue. They're literally a game from Croke Park now. And it will be a great story if they can make it. But it's already a great story. And Neely Ryan, what a man at 38, winning his second Connacht Junior Club medal on Saturday.
Good Lord. I'm only 2 years on from that. And I tell you what, I'm not sure I could run Markovic Park without needing a break. That's it from me. Billy Chopin, thanks for joining us.
Very welcome, Rob.
Mike Finnerty, sure, we'll be talking to you soon too.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Good to talk. See you soon.